Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Into action!
All right, we're off. Cheers.
Awesome.
Thanks
Cheers.
For inviting me aboard
your mobile
home.
Yes.
So where are you and Matt? Are you and Matt up there?
Yes.
The other two down there?
Two boys in the bunks.
And
yes.
You've got fridges. You've got a bathroom on here.
Yeah. We don't use it, though, because we pack it, the whole thing full of merch and suitcases.
Okay. So this is fairly open right now, but it's not usually like this.
No.
Usually there's stuff everywhere.
Yes. We've gotten pretty creative with the packing to fit all of the entire back line.
Like Tetris.
Exactly. Yeah. And now we've got a pretty good system of where everything goes, and load in, load out is pretty smooth. But yeah, depending on the tour, and luckily we've been okay with not having to bring too much. Sometimes we can split back line with some of the opener or support acts. So yeah. It's been good. I like the rolling like this. You can sleep anywhere. It's cheaper than a splitter.
It seems to me to be a no-brainer. Like,
yeah.
It just seems like you're kind of in a much better self-contained, comfortable unit than piling in a van, finding a hotel in the middle of nowhere. The only thing is, where do you park overnight? Like, where do you choose your spots to park up and sleep?
Yes.
Is that tricky?
Well, it actually just depends on Matt, our guitarist, because he's the only one that is brave enough to drive on the opposite side of the road and with stick shift, because everyone has automatic in Canada. So he's our driver. So if he's been partying, we are just sleeping where we are.
Which he was last night,
yes,
I hear.
Yes, yes. And then, but sometimes if we want to, it'll be more convenient if we just stay at a truck stop. Because then we have bathrooms all night and food if you need it and stuff like that. But
and generally you avoid drunk people at truck stops because most people are driving.
Yes, exactly.
So you don't get
rocking
going
exactly.
on. Do people ever do that? Do they ever come up to the van and bang? And
well, we had graffiti. Some person did in New Zealand when we were touring, we did the same thing with a camper van, and they just tagged the entire side of our rental camper van.
Are you then charged by the hire company for the removal of that?
It's a funny story because the band we were touring with, Devil Skin, which is an awesome New Zealand band that we actually played Underworld with last time we were at Underworld, the bass player Paul actually happened to be a graffiti removal guy in another life before he became a rock star.
Wow.
And when we drove to his house, he was like, oh, I'll be able to take care of that for you. Let me get my stuff. And he had the right chemicals or whatever to remove it so that we didn't get charged.
Amazing.
Yeah, I know.
So what luck.
I know.
So I want to talk to you about where you grew up in Ontario. Is that right? How am I saying that?
Ontario.
Ontario.
Yes. Yes,
and
yes.
That is a part of Canada, which is, what is it, rural? Is it kind of urban?
So Ontario is...
Set the scene. I've never been to Canada, so my knowledge of the country is ignorant at best.
Ontario is like a province.
Right.
So it's out of 11... they are pretty, Ontario is a massive place. It'll take, 15 hours or something to you know, drive across it, if not longer. Where I grew up is north of Toronto, which most people are familiar with Toronto. So I lived about an hour north. So it was small town growing up, but now Toronto's grown so much that it's pretty much swallowed up all the small towns all around it. So now it's, you just, from Toronto, you just don't stop. It's just like constant. There's maybe a few farm fields left in between Toronto, maybe a couple, but it's all been developed since I grew up there as a little kid. So now I live south of Toronto, so more closer to a town called Hamilton, which is a really awesome music city in Canada. There's lots of artists that move to Hamilton because it's like a cheaper version of Toronto. Toronto's gotten so expensive that a lot of people kind of that couldn't afford like the crazy prices, who are more artist life kind of stuff, moved to Hamilton and actually created like a really cool artsy scene. And we have this thing called Super Crawl where you, and they have Art Crawl every like few weekends where people just come out of their stores and, you know, you have tons of like artists just, you know, on the street. You have performers, you have bands, you just, it's just culture, music, food, awesomeness. And then Matt and I live in a converted church that is out in the country. So about a half hour from Hamilton, kind of in between Niagara Falls and Hamilton. So we're kind of, super rural where we live. Our little church is backs up to a community center, and that's pretty much the little town. It's just like our church in the community center. And it's awesome because we live right next to a park. So in the summers, all the kids come out and play baseball and they have barbecues, and it's a nice little neighborhood. And we've gotten really close to our neighbors. They're watching our dog right now.
So it's a world away from the rock and roll life when you're out on the road. It's a nice respite.
Yes.
From all of that.
But what's great too is because it's in the middle of nowhere, we can play music at all hours. We do our rehearsals there. We've filmed a lot of our music videos at the church as well. And it's just like a great, creative, relaxing space. And I love it. There's still so much work to do because the second level of the church is completely unfinished. So it was our dream when we moved in to like completely finish it, like a proper studio. But we've been spending so much time on the road, which is a great thing. And we've been keeping busy. So we just haven't put the effort and money that we need to into the home. We've been investing it into the tours.
But it's there.
Yes.
And do you own it?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you got your own little plot of land.
Yeah, I was actually obsessed with buying a church. Because not only because like you think, oh, musician, acoustics. I love history. It's like this old red brick. And you don't get much, you know, we're here in London where there's so much history. But like 1888 when it was built is like pretty old for Canada. And so I love it. I love the history to it. And we get a lot of bats and rats, which sucks because the foundation is just like a crawl space, just dirt in the kind of basement. It's just like a few like a couple feet tall, so it's easy for the rodents to find their way in, especially when we're not home for months. So yeah, that's the downside, but everything else is great.
And your folks, what did they do for a job, and where does the interest in performance and music and acting and everything, where does that start for you?
Well, when I was young, I was very into like musical theater, and I did all the school plays, and just very much look at me my entire life. I remember growing up, and I'm the oldest of all my cousins, and I would convince them all to be in my musical, and I would like give them parts and tell them where to sing and stuff, and we'd put on these shows for all of
them. Have you got
family.
Brothers or sisters, or were you only child?
Yeah, I have a younger brother and younger sister.
Right.
Parents, actually, my whole family are in a family business, rocks and gravel. So they like, you know,
it's bulldozers. It's a different kind of rock.
Yes, exactly. My dad always says, the other rock business my daughter's in. So, so what's kind of cool is I grew up going to like these quarries and learning how to drive bulldozers. And I actually drove one in one of my music videos because I had access to like, I'm like, I can drive bulldozers. We should do this in a music video. Another video, I like drive a loader, and like I always use the the quarries because they're such fun locations to like film music videos, and you can
and
make it look
like a
desert.
Out of the ordinary, aren't they? They're not just a band in a garage jamming out.
Yeah, for sure. But what's really cool, and a lot of people don't know about it, is they think, oh, it's just like, you know, tearing down a bunch of trees and then there's just like it's barren there. But they actually develop it very systematically, so they're only digging the gravel out of one area at a time, and then they restore the other areas by, you know, planting trees. They have tons of like wildlife that they'll bring into the lakes once the gravel's dug out, and fish, and they have like they use all the properties for like cool things, like the Olympic swimmers will come there and train and things like that. There's a lot of cool things that go on, not just like digging the gravel. There's a, like a beach at one of the locations, and
like as a whole, is Canada quite green and progressive in that way?
Yes, I mean we live in like the most developed part, or at least like around, you know, Toronto, which is like the most developed part of Canada, and still it feels very like I don't get that vibe that I do
pollution
some
or
other
dirt
place. Yes, yeah,
is minimal.
Yes.
And what comes first for you? Is it music? Is it acting? Because there's like a whole background to you before this band.
Yeah.
That I'd love to get into.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, music's number one. Always has been. And yeah, I just started really young, and I got really lucky really young with some like great opportunities in music. And it's just kind of almost like pushed me along. Whereas, you know, usually people will experiment with a lot of things before they decide what they want to do for the rest of their lives. But because I just kept stumbling upon great opportunities with singing, that I was like, okay.
And is that just because you were a badass singer? How are you getting so lucky? How are these opportunities finding you?
Yeah.
Or how are you finding them?
Well, I mean, I always love the quote, like, where preparation meets opportunity, right? So seizing the opportunities, this is really important. I think that's something that I got to give credit for my parents always kind of identifying, like to push me and encourage me to, like, at every point that I could to try to, like, show my talent or to try to put myself out there. And the one that sticks out in my head the most is when I was like 12 years old, I made my first demo recording of some songs, and I just
you'd written yourself as well.
Yes. And I just so happened to be going along the main street of Bolton, and there is a local hairdresser that knew my family, does my grandmother's hair, and invited me into the hair salon and was like, hey, like, how's it going? I hear you're making music. Your grandma's telling me about it. And so my mom's like, oh, we've got the CD. We'll come play it. So she runs to the car, grabs the CD, puts it on in the hair salon. And just so happens that one of the girls getting her hair done, her brother was like the biggest entertainment lawyer in Toronto. And so she's watching me like dance along to my demo and, you know, having a lot of fun with it. And so she's like, oh, I got to take this to my brother. Like, it's really good. Like, I'm seeing him tonight. It's my birthday. That's why I'm getting my hair done. I'll tell him I saw this cute young girl like dancing in the hair salon. And from there was like met with the top entertainment lawyer in Toronto and just kept meeting people like that, just because, you know, even you think performing for a hairdresser in a hair salon, like, where's that going to get you? But, you know,
right time, right place.
Exactly.
Talk about that.
Yeah.
And so who was it, your mum or your dad or both of them, that would obviously have to be like the guardian that was overseeing all of this business stuff and involved?
Yeah, both of them were very involved
with the career early on.
Yeah, both of them were very involved and very organized. My mother would make like, she had crazy notebooks of every phone call, every business phone call that we did, what everyone said, who was mentioned in the call. They would do research on who these people were because they wanted to make sure that, you know, it's a scary business for a, you know, young girl to get into, that, you know, mom and dad are making sure that I'm not with any kind of like sleazy or unprofessional people. They want to make sure everything's on the up and up and legit. And so they were, did their due diligence as much as they could. You know, they, you know, there's still things you just can't predict or know what's going to happen, but they were very supportive. And and yeah, my dad was like, my dad was in a band when he was in high school doing covers and stuff. He was a singer in a band, so they always loved music, but there was no like, I don't have like, you know, any musicians in my family that like actually went out to do that as a career. It was just more of like everyone's fun hobby. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of worked for me.
And how old were you when you made your debut solo album?
Which
is called Noise in the Basement, right?
Yeah, so I was recorded that with a producer who was 21 at the time. I was 13. And this is like, it was a really exciting time because he was like, his dad was a huge producer in Canada and had like all this music gear that he'd collected throughout his years. So he kind of stored it all in the basement along with a ton of grandfather clocks that were everywhere. He had this clock collection and all this crazy gear. But James Robertson is his name. He was like, I need a laptop. That's what I need. So he could play every instrument, super talented musician. But yeah, he was like, this was early days where it was like, yes, making music on computers. And it was exciting for me to like be able to work with one person and we could create this awesome music. And it sounds like these finished songs. And it was, you know, up until that point, I always thought that you had to have like a band and you had to hire all these people and producers and studios. And it was just really fun, like two kids in the basement just making noise. And
hence the title, yeah, literally.
Yeah, exactly.
Love it.
And I didn't know like that the recordings that we were doing at that point were going to actually be used and released on Capitol Records. Because once I got signed, they basically sent them to Chris Lord-Alge, one of the biggest mixers.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, it's kind of funny because he said that they were the worst organized sessions he's ever seen because we were just like, you know, we weren't thinking we were going to send it off to him when we were making them, you know. We just thought we were just, you know, screwing around in the basement. So, yeah.
So you're just throwing it all at the wall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, it was a very fun time. I remember my parents would even let me skip school to go to the studio and work with James. And
what are your friends making of all of this? Are they excited for you? Are they jealous? Are they supportive?
Yeah,
because that's quite an exciting, cool thing to do at such a young age.
Oh, it is. It is for sure. I think a lot of people didn't quite understand it completely. I remember I went to an arts high school. I only was there for about 4 months before I dropped out to do homeschooling. But I remember that's when I started seeing the jealousy because that's when I got a little older. You're in high school now, and I was in arts high school, so everyone there wanted to do something in the arts. And I remember I ran in the day I got a record contract, and I ran into the class. I just remember like, I got a record deal, and we were just like piled on each other in the hallway, and all my friends were really excited for me. But then as soon as I left the school, it's just like rumors, like all these rumors of what I was doing, or oh my gosh. And I would come back to like collect stuff or see my friends, or and I would just hear all these whispers, oh, that's Sky, that's the girl that got the record deal and she left school. And some people would, you know, they would say that my parents like bought my way in and stuff like that, or they would, you know.
So you learned at quite a young age the, I guess, the envy and the negativity that can surround success.
Yeah, one girl said that I stole her song or her lyrics or something from high school. There's just you just hear stuff. I remember one of the girls I work with super closely, who's a great friend now, we're like best friends, and she does a lot of the graphics and art for the band. She told me that she back in the day when, you know, she didn't know me personally, she's like, I called you a bitch to my friend, like I didn't know you, I'm so sorry. But everyone would just create rumors and no one actually knew me, or you know. But it's fine. I got off pretty easy. I was like touring the world and having a lot of fun.
Well, this would have been like pre-social media as well, right?
Yes.
Just before that.
Yes.
So people can't go online and shit talk you in message
like
forums. And
MSN Messenger was as bad as it got.
Yeah. And so you toured with Britney Spears off the back of that album. Is that right?
Yeah. So
that's nuts.
Yeah. It was actually before the album even came out, which was kind of ridiculous to me because we didn't have any music to sell while I was on like one of the biggest tours of that year, you know, and we did 50 shows.
Was it just you as well? Were you the main support act?
So there was also Khalees who was,
okay,
did that.
Yeah,
yeah. Milkshake Spring.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah. So
what a trip. So you, Khalees, Britney Spears.
Yeah.
And it's world tour all over,
yes,
the world.
It was awesome. It was crazy. It was just what a way to like break me into like touring life, you know. But yeah, it was just exciting, and like everything just kept happening really fast at that age, you know. It was like from learning how to, you know, sing in front of a microphone for the first time, and then like the next year you're recording an album in a basement, and the next year you're touring with Britney Spears and getting signed to Capitol Records. It was just like insane how fast it went.
What was that experience of being on the road like in a, you know, as you say, a tour of that scale?
Wow. Well,
to wrap your head around.
Yes. Well, you're pretty lucky. I was pretty lucky. I mean, we had a massive tour bus, had my face on the side. My dad would always say, don't let your head get as big as that face on that bus, guy. So I could open up like my face in the window and like peek out of my own face. It's pretty ridiculous. There was like catering. They would have like a guy like that would make, you know, stir fries for you, and you'd tell them what you want, like full whatever you needed, they were there. Wow, it was like I had a lot of people traveling with me, so like road manager, we had text, you know, five band members. My mom was usually with me, sometimes my dad, but mostly my mom. And yeah, I was just, I had like a full label always escorting me to interviews and busy schedules. And yeah, it was exciting. I wish somebody, though, gave me a little more advice about my makeup and stage outfits, because that was one thing I was left to my own devices. And I like look back at the pictures now and I'm like, oh, girl, I had this one suitcase we just named Bertha. And it was this massive box that whenever I needed to bring my wardrobe into the venue, it was like this big tickle trunk of clothes, and I would just have all this fun like throwing tutus around in the dressing room. And it was very innocent, but I don't think I realized the gravity of like how lucky and how that just doesn't happen for people. Like, it, you know, now that I've been in the industry, it's been like 15 years since then, I realize how those opportunities are so few and far between. And I don't think I let it sink in. It was just like, oh, I'm just having the best time. I was just so young. And so now I look back and I'm like, wow, like you just had the world in the palm of your hands there. And there's so much more I could have been thinking of business wise. But, you know, when you're, you know, 15 years old, that's, you're not always thinking like tactics,
no,
business,
no,
right? Long term, how to sustain my career for the long term. I'm just like, woohoo, I'm on tour. So, but now, you know, I look back and I'm like, wow, I could have done so many things to capitalize on how many people I was meeting and all the opportunities and everything. Like even just creating long, like remembering the relationships and nurturing them a little bit more with some of the people that I had in the business that, you know, were, you know, tops of radio stations and things like that, that I just kind of like, oh, hi, whatever. Like didn't think like, you know, these are big people in the industry, like make sure you remember their name and
keep them on side.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any conflicts within your own head when you look back at that period, or are you at peace with it and you just think that was a great time, that was then, this is now, it's a completely different thing?
Yeah.
Is there regrets or anything like that, or troubles that keep you awake at night?
You know, no, I've been so lucky. I mean, I think back so fondly.
It didn't jade
in those
you at
times.
All.
No, that's the one thing that I think has been almost a blessing, to have gone from that to having years later not having any more phone calls and not being on the label, and then building what I have now with Sumo Psycho up from literally ground zero again. Because I think that without that, if it kept going the way it went and I kept doing those tours, I don't know if I would have been grounded as a human being, because going from 16 and never knowing what it's like to have to drive your own tour van around, or to pay your dues, or to put in the hard work, like I could have gone off the rails. I don't know. But having
and then drink and drugs and all of that,
yeah,
comes into the
knows?
Mix. And
I don't know.
Could have been another one of those
happened.
Like child star,
yeah, exactly,
casualties.
So I think it was actually really healthy for me to have to just like start things again and reprioritize. And really, when I was 19, 20 is when I was kind of making a decision, like, do I want to go back to school? You know, do I want to try something else in my life? Do I want to keep going with music? And I just made the decision that I wanted to go all in and try something new and started the band. And it's been really fun. It's been a wild ride, but very different time in the industry than when I was doing pop music.
Well, in the industry as a whole is just way different now, isn't
it? Yeah, for sure.
The money is gone.
I really caught the tail end of like,
yeah,
the money, and the CDs were still selling and record labels were still putting big bucks into, you know, a nobody that they just, you know, I was just such a young, innocent thing in there and just like, okay, you're going to be the priority artist on our record label. And, you know, here's millions of dollars to go tour and stuff. It was, I always say this, I don't have $1 million, but I have $1 million worth of experiences because there was a lot of money spent on my career. And although I didn't walk away, you know, being some, you know, rich, you know, one hit wonder or something like that, the experiences were insane.
Priceless.
The things I got to do. Yeah. So, yeah, I got to go to so many places. I did really well in Japan. MTV Japan had me do a special on a ski hill, like I was snowboarding in the mountains in Japan. It's just like weird things that you never think that you will ever do in your life that just kind of like, they just happen. It was great.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did you take a lot of photos from all of these experiences and times? Is there a nice collage and scrapbook of memories?
Yeah, if you do some deep digging into YouTube,
right,
you can definitely find. My parents were cool about always making sure that I had a working digital camera with me.
Is that where the interest in videography,
yes,
and editing and all of,
yeah,
that begins?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so they're really like encouraging. Like whenever my camera would break, my parents were always like, no, we need to capture everything. So they would always make sure I had a working digital, like your kind of big bulky things back then.
Yeah, you
know? Yeah. Can't do it on the phone. So yeah, and I would just film, you know, whatever I was up to and kind of vlog it, you know. I think it would have been so cool if I was able to put it on the internet at that time so easily, which I wasn't. So it took a lot of effort to like get my little DV tapes and then hook them up to the computer, and I could only do that at a
desktop. YouTube wasn't a thing either.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? I used to film loads of stuff at school and college, and it never went anywhere. Now I'm like, thank God it didn't.
Yeah.
It's just sat in a box in my room and will never see the light of day. But it's, yeah, there was those platforms for people to just self-promote in that way, or just share, you know, our lives in the way that we do with Facebook and things like that, mm-hmm, and Instagram. None of that was around. It just seems like, although it's been such a short space of time, it seems like the world has changed so much.
Oh, yeah,
in the last 10 years. It's mad.
Yeah.
Where does Tim Armstrong come into the picture?
Oh, yeah.
And how?
Okay.
I want to talk to you about this.
Yeah. So after I finished my first record and I did the touring stuff with Britney, I went in to do another follow-up album. And I had this really cool A&R guy named Julian Raymond. And he actually got the career started for like Insane Clown Posse, and like he was a big punk rock fan. And I was actually supposed to be with the pop A&R guy, but he happened to be at Capitol. He was the rock A&R guy, but for some reason I just switched A&Rs and I wanted to be with him. And so he had a lot of connections in like more of the heavier genres.
Were you always into rock and punk?
Yes, very much so.
So even though you were like very much entrenched in this pop world, you were still into guitar.
Oh, yes. Everything was guitar-based. Yeah, that was one of the main things, even with my pop music is that there was always guitars there. And I learned how to play guitar really early on. Like, I'm not great, but just to, like, write songs. And I had me and James Robertson, the first producer I was talking about there, he was really into these Steinberger guitars, which don't have, like, the tuning head. They all tune at the bottom. So they look really funky. And some people make fun of us for having them. But they were our little thing. And it's actually on the cover of my Japanese version of my record, is me holding a Steinberger. But, so, sorry, I lost my train of thought where I was going.
You're with the punk rock A&R yes. guy. You've gone over to him.
Yeah. So he, I did, like, some crazy sessions. So they, it was very different experience than the first record. The first record was like me and my buddy in the basement, very chill, just us experimenting. Record number two, pressure's on. This needs to be like a hit record. They put me with every like major songwriter you could imagine. I got to work with like Max Martin. I got to work with Mark Hoppus from Blink 182. I got to work with Matt Wilder, who did Tragic Kingdom album by No Doubt, which is like one of my favorite albums. I got to work with like all these crazy people, and Tim Armstrong was one of them that was on the list. And I remember we met at his house and with my mom, and I remember totally putting my foot in my mouth because I was trying to compliment him about how cool it was that I was working with him, and trying to compare him to the fact that I had to kind of work with these like quote unquote hit makers that you kind of go in and it's like a formula where you just like kind of they've already have like the song kind of written. And I was trying to explain that in a way, but I guess I put my foot in my mouth and I made it seem like he's not a hit maker. And I remember him kind of getting offended the first time I met him. I'm like, I'm so sorry, like I didn't mean it like that. I meant like you actually have like a like this kind of cool, like gritty sound that I think that the other guys don't have because they're just like highly produced kind of things. He's like, I can produce. I'm like, no, you're not getting what I'm saying. So we got off on like a little bit of a wrong foot, but then became like really good friends. And it was a really cool experience working with him. He was working on his Poet's Life record at the same time that he was working with me. So he had some songs that were kind of either kind of he was thinking would go on his record, but he wasn't sure. And we would try writing and actually Into Action, which is the song that I'm singing on Poet's Life, was originally for my record. And then he had someone in the industry was coming over to his house and heard the song and said, what is that? I love that. That's going to be a hit. And he was like, oh, that's something I'm doing for this artist, Sky Sweetnam. And then I think wheels started turning in his head. He's like, oh, I could do the verses. She could sing the chorus. And having him being on it would make it, you know, probably bigger than me, because nobody knew who I was. They know who Tim Armstrong is. So yeah, and it became like a super kind of fun summer hit in LA. I did the
was it a hit, was it, because I
in LA, yeah,
adore that song.
Yeah.
And I didn't apparently realize when I first met you that you were on it, and then I yeah. remember when I learned, I was like, oh my god, I didn't realize that was you.
I think it was
it's
like
such a great treat.
The number one requested song on like K-Rock in LA. Wow. For a while. And then I went down and did the K-Rock Weenie Roast, which
yeah,
is
yeah.
like their
I've
big,
been to one of those. Yeah,
yeah, their big kind of like concert, and that was really cool. And then Agrolites, who were working with Tim as well, they played on that as well as the songs that me and Tim worked on together. And so they came on stage, and yeah, it was really fun. And I got to do a lot of features at Rancid shows. So whenever I was in the same city, I would jump on stage with Rancid and do Who Would Have Thought was the song we would always do
I know
together.
That one very well.
Yeah.
On Life Won't Wait.
Yeah.
A great song.
Yeah. And so, yeah, one time I remember they were doing a show in New York. Rancid was doing a show in New York. And Tim's like, if you want, you can come on stage and sing Into Action with us. And I was just at home in Toronto, and I drove 11 hours straight overnight just to get there so I could just jump on stage for one song. And yeah, it was just, it's so much fun. Like, I got to hang out with the Rancid guys, and remember, just, I kind of, in LA sometimes, I don't know if you feel this, Matt, but like, it's like, you just kind of like, feel like you're in a movie, like, because there's just like, famous people all around, and it just, you've seen the places so many times in like movies and TV shows that you're just like, this is so surreal. Mm-hmm. I just remember being in like a Starbucks and Tim and Lars are debating over like who the best bands are. And I'm just kind of sitting there going like, this is just wild that I'm even here, like just like witnessing this, you know?
I know exactly the feeling.
You know, just so crazy. And those are moments I'm kind of like, yeah, it's pretty wild, like the things I've gotten myself into in my life. Yeah.
So you got to spend a pretty decent amount of time in that camp, as it were.
Yeah, they're really quite a family. Like, Tim was doing his music videos for all of his songs on a solo record, and so they would invite all of the kind of his LA friends and the whole crew out to like the music video shoots, and we'd just like hang out. And there was definitely some like parties at Tim's place, and you know, it was just very creative. He'd have people in there all the time. There'd be like one girl that designed jewelry, and she would be like, you know, designing stuff in the house, and then he'd be painting. And it was just very, because he was doing all the merch stuff with Machete, and then like just working with all these different bands, and it was just very cool. Just a very cool atmosphere, lots of creativity, lots of ideas, lots of feeling like there's lots of possibilities to do cool things. And
it's not like a scary world, although they're like punk rockers. Mm-hmm. They're not intimidating or dark.
No, well, I was totally intimidated the first time I met him. And just like, yeah, just being, you know, so young and trying to be cool. You know, it's so important when you're that young. You're like, oh my God, I gotta be cool in front of these guys. Like, they're legends in the punk rock world, you know, like. But after like getting to them, like everyone's so friendly and just, you know, so wanting to take you under their wing and be like, yeah, you're one of us. And that was really cool when I had like, you know, those guys like, you know, give me the stamp of approval, so to speak, you know. I think that was like one of the moments that I'm like, cool, I could be more than just like, because sometimes I would get that with the pop. I mean, be more than like just like a pretty face and a voice, because I would get that a lot from the doing the pop stuff.
And, know your place kind of.
Yeah.
Thing.
And especially like what was so crazy is I remember when I got signed to Capitol, they had never heard me sing live. They just off of the recordings, you know, they thought that that was good enough. Like, and I'm like, well, what if I couldn't sing live? And they like signed this contract with me. And the night they took me out to sign the contract, I think they were trying to trick me into going to karaoke so that they could. But I was so young, I never stayed up to like 2 a.m. on the wrong time zone, because I'd flown in from Toronto. So I was 3 hours behind LA. And I was just like, I'm not going, I can't go out like that late. And my parents are like, no, she's got to go to bed. And I think they were like, yeah, we could take her to karaoke and figure out if she can actually
she can do
sing.
It
Yeah, but it was crazy, like when the actual courting process of Capitol Records, at that point they flew me down like first class. They had, you know, the driver with the name card, you know, waiting at the airport in the limousine, take me to this fancy hotel called the Mondrian, which everything was like trippy and white, and got me a suite and took me out to the Ivy restaurant, which is this really swanky restaurant in LA, and took me to the top of the Capitol Records building. They let me on the roof where they have the Capitol Records iconic thing. I don't even think they let people on the roof that much anymore after security concerns and stuff, but wow, it was just like, could dreams come true for a 15-year-old that wanted to sing? Like, that was pretty crazy. Yeah, so that's when I talk about, yeah, being humble now. Like, I think things were like a fairy tale for a while, which life is not a fairy tale, which I realized later. but for a few years, it definitely felt that way. Yeah.
Did you come across any, you know, sleazy behavior in that mainstream big business record industry?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's, you know, I was kind of blind to it at the beginning, but then you kind of look back and you're like, oh man, that wasn't really appropriate.
Yeah.
And I think too, is I was trying to act so much older than I was, you know, all the time. And I was hanging out like with my band, you know, we're all like at least like 10 years older than me. I was hanging out with adults all the time. So I kind of forgot that I was even a kid. And then when you kind of think about it, you're like, okay, well, I was really young. Like, they shouldn't have been doing, like, drinking and drugs around me and, like, you know, should have been a little bit more well-behaved around, like, a 15, 16-year-old, you know? But yeah, luckily I'm okay from it.
You got out unscathed.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Good. And how do you then segue into, you know, starting up your own band and walking away from, you know, the pop career?
Yeah.
Is that a choice you make, or does it just kind of run its course?
Yeah.
And then do you decide, you were talking a moment ago about maybe going back to school, is music ever, like, off the cards? Do you ever consider just mm-hmm. giving it all up and walking away?
Yeah, so what happened with the second record is I was actually so excited for it to be released. I did a lot of it with a group called The Matrix, which at the time did, like, they did, like, Avril Lavigne's biggest record. They worked with, you know, all the A-list. They did a record with Korn, actually, which was the one thing that made me change my opinion of them, because I thought that they worked with a lot of young females that I thought, oh, maybe I don't want to work with a writing team that just does young females. I want to try something else. But then they were like, yeah, we just finished Korn's record. I was like, wasn't expecting you to say that. But they're really cool. There's a writing team of three. They're no longer working together, I think, because there was a husband and wife, and fortunately they're no longer together. But it was a really cool atmosphere. Came in every day, worked on all these awesome songs, worked with Tim, did like three songs with him. Had an amazing record, I thought. And it was mixed. It was ready to be, like, put in, kind of, like, submitted to the label to say, like, we're done the record, like, let's get the marketing going. And they had a massive merger in the labels. So it was basically, like, Virgin and Capitol were, like, kind of converging and switching the president. So the president that was the one who signed me.
This is the story with everyone that I speak to, is new staff in the label means they're no longer interested in the old signings.
Exactly.
Because they want to make their mark and look after their people.
Yes.
And so people just either get dropped or left in the ether
all
the time. I mean, that obviously doesn't happen anymore because the industry's so different.
Yes.
The amount of people I've spoke to that have had exactly that series of events happen.
And I was just kind of put on hold, you know. It was like, oh, you have this great record, but, you know, you're not really, don't know any of the... It was crazy. It was within a span of like a week. It was like marketing guy's gone, A&R guy's gone, you know, label president's gone. And I'm like sitting here going like, oh, I don't know anybody anymore. And they were the ones that were like just believed. They were giving me the second chance because the first record didn't do as well as they'd hoped. There was kind of some, like I said, they put me on tour when the record wasn't even out. So there was all these, I feel, a few missed opportunities in the way that things got handled for the first record. But they're like, next one, got you with everybody you should be working with. And I was just kind of heartbroken that the record wasn't going to see the light of day at all because, as you know, they own the masters. So you can't even release it if they don't want you to. And so I was really defeated. I went back to Canada, and just so happened that I was close enough with EMI, which is the umbrella company for Capitol. I was close enough with the people I knew in Canada that they said, well, because it's still in our company, we can license the masters and at least get it out in Canada and release the record in Canada. So the second record only got released in Canada and Japan. It was only the only two territories that it got released in. And then after that, I kind of just asked if I could be let go from the contract so I could start something else. And
what was their response? Yes?
Yeah. They were like, fine to sign off. The American company was like, no, we haven't even heard about you. Don't care about you. Whatever. You can do what you want. The Canadian side, they were kind of like, oh, you could do another album if you want with us or whatever. And I was like, you know what? Let me think about it. Let me think of what I want to do creatively. I wasn't really sure. Like I said, I was kind of contemplating. I, you know, had done a bit of touring for the second album in Canada, but it was so much different than...
The Britney world.
The U.S. Britney world. I was driving a minivan myself. You know, we were driving across, you know, rural Canada, you know, playing with, like, you know, the Canadian Idol at the time, who's this really cute kid who played violin.
How, like, many people a night, roughly?
It wasn't too bad. It was a couple hundred, but it was not arenas full of Britney Spears, you know. So, you know, I was kind of thinking about, you know, what I was going to do next. And Matt, who was the original guitar player who toured with me on the road with Britney and stuff, he was always in a band called Dodger, We became good friends.
You know Matt from all the way back then, so he was on the Britney tour.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was he a kid as well then, or was he a...
Yeah, well, he's 10 years older than me, so he was like 24, 25 when it was all going down. So
wild.
Yeah. So I kind of called him up after a while. And I was like, hey, man, like, what are you up to? Like, I know you're working with Dodger, whatever. Like, we should write some songs. We had kind of played with writing a few songs, like, on the road and stuff. He had got his own laptop and started learning how to do Pro Tools and stuff. And so, yeah, we started working together and then came up with this crazy idea to do this band. And it's funny because I hadn't seen him for, like, a year. And I was going through all this stuff in LA and whatever, and I met him, and he's like, oh, Sky, like, I think you would like this band, like, they're called Skindred, and he gave me the Babylon record.
There you go.
And we
all comes back to Skindred,
yeah,
doesn't it?
We listened to that, and we kind of bonded over that, like,
just
after
that mashup of styles.
Yeah, and seeing each other after a long, like, not seeing each other for a while, and bonded over the record, and us both loving the record, inspiring us to, like, write music together. And that's why it was such a cool thing that it came full circle and I was able to do a song with Benji, because it was literally the puzzle piece that kind of put the two of us together to start writing music, and for me to get inspired about starting a heavier project and a band. And so it all comes back to that record, which is so cool. So that's why I gush over Benji so much all the time. And yeah, just love the fact that we've been able to actually get to know each other. It's so cool.
It's great.
Yeah.
Well, that was where we first met, was Wolverhampton, Ugly Kid Joe, Skindred, you guys, Wild Night in that bar, the Lock-In.
Yeah.
And I think you got up with them on stage that night, writing some warning.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And Move Mountains was the track that you did with Benji.
Yes.
So tell me, did he kind of write the part, or was the part just kind of there ready to go and he jumped on it and did his thing?
No, he wrote it. So I guess I'm a little too obsessed with Skindred because I
studied his style.
Well, I cyberstalked James LaRock, who is the producer that did the last few Skindred records. So I found out who produced them, and I was like, maybe I could get, like, on this guy's radar, because it's sometimes hard to get on, like, you know, the band's radar right off the hop. So I was like, I could probably, like, message this guy and just show him my music. And so he actually came out to, like, our first ever London show we ever did.
Where was that?
In the O2 Islington, the smaller room. And so he came out to see us play and liked it enough to, like, yeah, if you guys come back here, like, I'd like to do a recording with you guys. So the next time we came through, we arranged to go to this really cool studio at it was kind of like an old house in the middle of the countryside, and went and recorded Move Mountains with him. And during that trip, when we arrived in, I talked to our PR company, who had connections with Skindred and Benji as well. And they're like, yeah, you should totally get Benji to do a track. And then we kind of mentioned it to James again when we were, because we're like, oh, we're coming to record with you. Do you think we could get, you know, maybe throw it out to Benji if he would perhaps consider a feature? And between the two people we knew that knew him and kind of putting the little worm in his ear that this band wanted to do a song, he was like, yeah. So we sent him the tracks, and he sent back his rough vocal. And I remember being so, because I hadn't met him or anything at this point, and I remember the day.
Are you having the dialogue between the two of you over email, or is it going through third parties?
Yeah, it's email, but it's through third parties as well. So we did a little kind of intro email between us, but I hadn't like talk to him or anything. He just sent the track. So I'm listening to, like, you know, one of my favorite bands, and like Benji's doing a part. So I have my headphones. I'm going to listen to what he wrote over, like, my song. And I remember being in the close to Rebellion Bar, actually, in Manchester. There's this little cafe called Atlas. And I remember so clearly that Matt and I were fighting over who got to listen to the headphones first, because we couldn't listen to it out loud because we were in public space. And I was like, I'm going to listen to it first.
So papers is a stone.
Yeah. So we filmed each other's reactions, like, listening to it. And we were both just, like, freaking out how cool it was. And so then the song got pretty much done over the internet. Like, we didn't actually record in the same room or anything. And it wasn't until the following time that we came over.
Shot the video.
That we shot the video, and I got to meet Benji for the first time. And it was just like, the best day ever. I couldn't stop smiling. Matt always makes reference to the music video that I don't look cool because I'm not making any cool faces. I'm just like smiling with the biggest grin on my face, being like, I'm rocking with Benji. Because it was just, you know, one of those things I didn't think was going to happen, but I put it out in the universe and it happened. You know,
I'm a firm believer in that.
Yeah.
And we've spoken before about, you know, both being independent operations and doing the hustle and the grind and kind of putting yourself out there in a way that, you know, shameless self-promotion. Sometimes you've got to be unafraid to do that and also ask the question, because all they can say is no.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you don't ask, you don't get.
Exactly.
So you've got to just be cheeky and go for it and hope for
sure.
the best.
Yeah.
Benji's great as well. He's always supported like up and coming younger bands. And he's done a few guest spots over the years that I've known him on, you know, bands that have, I guess, for in some cases, just been completely unknown.
Yeah.
And he's very generous in that way, I think. And he just loves music and loves.
Yeah.
Rocking the mic.
Yeah. I just didn't think like that he'd be so cool to be like, yeah, just come to my hometown and we'll do the music video. I'll hook up the studio space. I'll get a camera guy that I know to come down. And just, I was like, what? But you're a rock star. Like, why are you being so cool? So it was just, you know, they say not to like meet your idols because you'll get disappointed. But I
just get better ones.
I know, exactly. I was not disappointed. I was like, oh my God, it's the best thing. And to meet him on the level where, you know, he's doing a track with us. So, you know, there's that mutual respect, you know, being kind of like, you know, both in bands, we're fighting the same fight. You know, it's really cool to just, you know, to have those people that you admire be awesome people. It's just, when it works out, it's great.
A lot of love for Benji. We share a birthday. We're birthday twins.
Oh, awesome.
So video making, I want to talk to you about that because you guys are very prolific in that department, you know, with your own music videos. I think you shoot and edit all of them yourselves, right? You're telling me that. Where do you start to kind of hone your skills in that department?
Yeah.
Is this when you're out doing the vlogging?
Yeah, for
as
sure.
As a young kid, does it
well,
kind of
the
begin
first,
there?
Yeah, for sure. Well, the first videos I did that actually kind of got me signed when I was younger was because I did what kids are totally doing now, which is I filmed myself introducing myself to the camera and said, hey, I'm Sky, this is my life. I showed a little bit of my world and then sent that as like an EPK thing over to the record label. And I think it was
Electronic Press Kit for anybody listening.
Yeah. And that was like, you know, people didn't have video cameras. Like it was still new to kind of have like a small compact digital camera to like, and for kids to be using them like that. So I think that was a selling point because they thought, okay, she's good in front of the camera. She likes, you know, talking, she's relatable. We can get like, kids will love this. We could put her on like different, you know, TV shows, reality shows, whatever, their brains going off kind of thinking about that stuff. And so I did a stop animation music video as well with these little they're called Playmobil toys. They're kind of like Legos.
I know Playmobil.
Yeah. I grew up, my parents were obsessed with Playmobil and they would give us these Playmobil sets every Christmas, every birthday.
That was pretty much my childhood too.
Yeah.
Big like cavalry forts and all of that. Yeah.
So that was like, we had so much of it that I'm like, we can make, you know, an entire Playmobil movie, basically. And I, before there was, because now there, I think there is a Rock Band set, but at the time there wasn't. So I had to make one myself, and I made a little like Rock Band set for the Playmobil. Had them play all in stop motion animation. One little character I made to look like me, and then sent that along with the song, and that was kind of got me started. So after having that experience, also I used to do, like, even before that, I remember doing a project for like high school, or not even high school, I think it was earlier, and I did it all on video because they said you could present it any way you wanted, and I decided I was going to film everything. So I just kind of like really liked being in front of the camera. And yeah, and then I just when I started Sumo Psycho, I kind of realized that I was going to do things a little bit more the traditional route, like, you know, start playing the small clubs, start, you know, by doing everything myself, kind of building it up. And I had kind of, the one thing that was really cool that I thought I would have lost, you know, after the Capitol thing kind of wasn't working, is that I kept a pretty cool online community just on like MySpace, and then started YouTube like within the first, I think, year or two that it was even around, and started making kind of like vlog videos and makeup tutorials and like really early stuff that I'm like laugh at now. It's just so ridiculous.
Well, now as well, people have entire careers built on that kind of thing, like influencers,
for sure,
which
yeah.
is a word I hate, but you know, people now make livings, decent livings.
Oh yeah, for
of
sure.
doing exactly that.
Yeah. So I got really into that, which I think kept a little bit of that social interaction with the people that had fallen in love with like the earlier music I was making, and kind of followed me just in the background there for a while.
As a personality.
Yeah, as a personality. And that's what kind of helped launch Sumo Psycho, actually, is I started thinking of, even then I was making like this campaign. My neighbor, Francesca, who I talked about earlier, she helps me take photos and Photoshop in this war happening. So it was like my trademark was the pink bulldozer, and that was fighting against something, and you didn't see what was coming. We had a series of images, and then the sumo wrestler like rose up, and the tank was going against this massive sumo wrestler, and it was like my marketing kind of like cheeky way of like saying, okay, something's changing here with my music, and I'm gonna start this new thing. And so I remember doing that series on MySpace, and then just like I kept getting creative with like ideas. I did this one video where I was like, I'm gonna get my alter ego Sever from Sumo Psycho is gonna kidnap Sky Sweetnam, and we did this like little skit where like she was getting kidnapped and she was gonna be put in the basement for a while like Sever took over. And I just realized if I was gonna do anything, I could do it myself and put it out. And I was really excited about like where the internet was going and seeing that, like, you know, I could get this immediate reaction from people right away. I could put stuff, you know, online, ask questions, ask what people liked. I just loved that idea. And I liked the idea of being completely in control after being in a record label situation where everything's overthought and you have like 12 people you have to get checked off on each, you know, thing that you need to do.
Yeah.
I just really like the idea of this
reclaiming your own image.
Yes.
And making out of it what you will and what
exactly.
you want.
Exactly. And I think that a big part of that was the visuals and the movie making, and I wanted to create something that went beyond just like the music, that could be its own kind of art statement. And I found that I really liked, and I like it more and more as I keep doing it, is just making these crazy music videos.
Well, your videos are incredible. And when I learned that you do it all yourself, I was like, wow, to have that skill set as well as doing all the music and, you know, the live show, is you've got this other like absolute arsenal of materials and locations and skills.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's so fun. I mean, it really is just the idea of,
oh, here's a guy here. Uh-oh.
Oh. Let's see how this goes.
Hey. Unfortunately, your time is up here.
Oh, yeah? Do we need to pay some more?
No, it's a free box, but it becomes a clear way after 4 o'clock.
Oh, okay. Let me just grab my driver. He's just inside that door.
Okay.
And we can figure out where we're going to put her.
What you actually do here, what you do here?
We're playing at this venue, the Underworld, my band is.
Have you got equipment in there?
We just had it. We just took it into the venue.
Okay. So where would you put it though?
I don't know. I guess we'll have to go around.
So it's just about parking now after all the equipment's in, just about parking?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. All right. And then we once the show is done, we'll just, I think, at the end of the night.
It'll
be like at midnight or something.
Okay. What you do, you go and find parking somewhere else,
yeah,
and then you come back here at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
7 o'clock is free.
It's free then at 7? Okay. Thank you.
Just had to deal with the parking.
Thank
so
you,
sorry.
Officer. I love it. Do you want to go and run in and
I'll get
boys?
Moving? Yes. Sorry, Matt.
It's all good. I mean, we're almost at the hour anyway, so
okay.
We can probably force a wrapped ending there. But yeah, I just wanted to say congratulations with everything you've got going
you.
On.
Thanks,
and you've
Matt.
Got you got Des Fafara managing you now
yes.
as well, right? So you've got a management team behind you.
I do. It's so exciting. Like all the people that want to be involved with this project and that keep encouraging us and keep being a part of it. It's really fun, you know? I don't take it for granted. I really like what I do. So,
is it going as well everywhere else in the world? Because the UK seems to love you.
You know what? UK is our favorite. We can't dispute that we do our best here, and we have a special place in our hearts for UK. That's for sure. I don't know why it's worked out this way, but it just so happened that this has been like the coolest place to come, and people want us back, and it's been growing. So. Yeah, I can't complain.
And it's still early days, isn't it? You're just getting started.
Yeah.
Shake my hand. Good to see you, Sky.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for a great chat. Yeah. What a life you've had.
Yes.
And what a life it will continue to be, I am sure.
Thank you.
Now let's get out of here before we get you guys fined.
Bye, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Officer.
Turn up the song. Come on, you're the girl vocal in my cans. Come on. Super psycho, I'm Benji Dread. We don't even run some up, man. We live every day.
No, this ain't no game. Lost all your breath when the moment came. We came to take charge of this badge on a renegade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.